Google the words Everest, line, and crowded, and check out the first image that pops up. It's probably the photo taken by climber Nirma Purja. You can see the peak of the mountains, snow-capped and picturesque, almost within reach. But what really stands out is the long line of climbers snaking its way down the impossibly rocky path. I mean, long lines are sometimes just an unfortunate part of daily life, but 29,000 feet above sea level is not a good place to get stuck in traffic. And while attempting to scale Mount Everest can be deadly any year, the crowd conditions in this season have contributed to at least 11 deaths so far. Joining me now is journalist Adam Popescu. Adam traveled to Everest in 2013 with the BBC and wrote a novel based on the experience called Nirma. Adam, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So this year is particularly deadly. Why is that?
Well, essentially, the big, big issue is there's a limited weather window, and there is no limits on the climbing season in terms of how many climbers can come up there. So it's a big problem, and we've seen this right now playing out.
Is this year part of a trend that's getting worse? Because honestly, when I looked at that photo, I thought I would never in my, but that's just me, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the strange thing about it. So there is a condition that's called summit fever. I climbed to what's called base camp, which is about 18,000 feet. And for the average person, that might sound like, oh, what a feat to get that high. But we're talking about people who are going to 26, 27, 28, up to 29,000 feet. And under those conditions, when you're inexperienced, as a lot of these people are, the dangers of being on this mountain really show themselves. And that's why, again, we're seeing these huge lines. We're seeing folks that really shouldn't be up there, people who are paying their way to the top, essentially. And that's why we're seeing so many deaths, unfortunately.
So you see there's people that shouldn't really be up there. What does that mean? I mean, who is going up there? Because from what I understand, it is not cheap to make this journey to Everest and on
right.
Everest.
It's not. It's not. It's, in fact, on the low end, you're going to spend about $40,000 or $50,000. And that's for an inexperienced guide. That's someone you might pick up in the street in Kathmandu. But if you want to really have the high-end so-called luxury experience or having one of these more celebrity guides, you can spend over $100,000. So it limits the kind of people that go. And the people that go are often a little bit older. They're often people who have not been to mountains before, but there's that allure of being at the top of the mountain. So it attracts people who are at the height of their respective industries. We have a lot of folks in the tech sector who go, a lot of folks who are retired. And again, they may not have experience on a mountain, so when something goes wrong, they don't know what to do. Or they may walk over someone who's just passed out or perhaps is on the edge of death and don't save them because they're so intent on getting to the top and they may have spent $100,000 to do it.
I mean, it just strikes me as something like, is the fact that there are more people who are interested in it and the 1% is growing and therefore there are more people, I guess you can say, who can afford to do this, bumping up against the Nepalese tourism industry and what their needs are. They seem to be okay with this.
I think it's hard for them not to be. It's one of the poorest nations in the world. There is stark corruption there. There is poor management at times of this mountain. And if your whole salary depends on this small window, if you are a climbing guide, if you're a Sherpa who takes foreigners, you get tremendous respect among your peers. You get tremendous money. And again, it's hard to say no. So they don't vet the physical ability of people like they should. And if they did, they would weed out people who should not be there. And when we talk about experience, that means being in altitude before, being able to do simple things like putting your crampons on, which people, what I've heard is they've not been able to do that at this high altitude, and they don't know what to do under difficult conditions. So again, that's all these factors. And then you're at the top of the world, essentially. And there's a big pressure to make it to the top. People are documenting it on social media nonstop. There's been so many films. And people who may have conquered the business world, for instance, will say, I can do that too.
Well, this is also having an impact on the Nepalese themselves. There have been people who, you know, the Sherpas themselves and also the climbers who may have lost their lives. I mean, this is not, and it seems to be driven by very wealthy tourism. And I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of the fact that this might be happening in other major or high profile tourist destinations around the world. Is that right? With the overcrowding from people who can really afford to make these big dramatic trips?
I think so. I think at one point these so-called expeditions to the ends of the earth were a little more accessible in a strange way because nobody wanted to go. It was known that it was dangerous to go to the Arctic and search for the North Pole. Or, you know, if you boarded a ship in England, for instance, you'd be gone for 2 or 3 years. You might never come back. Now we can go experience a small taste of that danger in a way that's curated, in a sense, that we might not even know how dangerous the place we're going to is, but we see this beautiful image on Instagram and we want to replicate that, or we want to get a little piece of it and then go home and brag to our friends. So yes, I think you're very right that these places, in a way, we're almost numb to the fact that we could lose our lives. And in places like the Arctic or the Galapagos, many places around the world, there is the issue of both money for the locals who are in a position where they are having to exploit their land because they don't have much economic options, and we have tourists who come and are willing to pay for it.
I mean, it's hard to say no if somebody's going to drop $100,000 in your tourism district.
Totally. And it's also hard to say no in knowing what the best practice is if you don't have an education, too. I mean, these people, we have a lot of standards in the West that we bring to other regions, and we expect them to have our value system. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the problem is there is a lot of residual. There's problems in terms of trash, infrastructure, a lot of things that they don't want you to see when you're going through someone's Instagram feed. But this is the push and pull of this modernization, and this is what's happening in a lot of places.
I mean, is there a trend towards more conscious travel?
I think there is a trend that's going towards more sustainable or responsible, or at least the idea of that. A lot of companies will advertise themselves as being eco-conscious and eco-friendly. The trouble of that is almost none of us really look into what that means. It's very easy to have a sign that says eco-conscious or eco-lodge or what have you. But do any of us actually ask questions or dig into it? I think very few of us do. We want to feel like we're not part of the problem. But unfortunately, the very nature of being in a place that's vulnerable, a place that's on the edge in terms of climate issues, overcrowding, trash, all these things that we see on Everest, we're inevitably part of that problem. So I think you have to be very aware of who you work with and who you're traveling with.
Adam Popescu is a Los Angeles journalist and also the author of the new novel, Nima. Adam, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.